Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. This is my first live show of this new year, 2016. About a week and a half ago, I was in New York City with my fiancé, Brian, and we actually visited the PRN studios, and it was such a pleasure. Got to meet Jason, who's on the board. He's the general manager of Progressive Radio Network, and Jason is very pleasant and competent, and so it was so good to meet Jason. I'm very pleased because my guest for the seventh time, Dr. Danoff,
Goodness. Time goes fast when we're having fun, huh?
I know, it's really true. And you are my first live show of the new year, and I couldn't be more pleased. Dr. Danoff has a book. Well, it was first called, and I think for about the first five shows, it was still being called and published, Penis Power. And then you changed the title to the subtitle of the first book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age. And I kind of know the backstory, but what was the reason for the change in the title?
Well, it's sad to say that in the 21st century in America, penis is still looked upon as a pejorative word. And we all know penis is a body part. The penis to the urologist is what the stomach is to the gastroenterologist, or the heart to the cardiologist. And I do these programs, radio, television, and the author of Penis Power, everybody giggles, and I have to say, get over it. You know, we're all adults.
Right.
So there was a lot of pushback from the mainstream media, and at the suggestion of the publisher, we just sort of rewrote the book, brought it a little bit more up to date. Still the same feeling, tongue in cheek, everything you wanted to know but were afraid to ask. But we just deleted the word penis from the title. It broke my heart.
yes. And if people go to your website, theultimateguidetomenshealth.com, they can watch some videos when you were on the doctor's show several times.
Yes.
And even there was a little bit of giggling, not too much, but among the doctors.
But, you know, enough to say, you know why? I'm a mainstream urologic surgeon. I do mostly urologic oncology, prostate cancer, kidney cancers, transplants, and, you know, wrote this book for the lay person, answering questions people were afraid to ask. And everybody giggles about it.
And it was true. I mean, I saw the doctors on the doctor's show, which is at least locally on, I guess it's NBC or ABC.
I'm not sure.
It's Channel 4
I've been
here.
On it a number of times, but I forget.
But anyway, so even the doctors were giggling a little bit about the title, Penis Power, but certainly when they flashed to the audience was giggling too, and it does seem a shame, but it is what it is, and you had to kind of go with the flow, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Look, we all have a sense of, look, I've seen more penises than can fill the Rose Bowl, and I've examined. You know, so clearly, if you don't have a sense of humor in this field of work, I think you're in trouble.
and you've been doing this work.
But still, we deal with some very serious problems. We certainly deal with ED. Yeah. We certainly deal with prostate cancer, urinary retention, diabetes, hypertension, all of the diseases that go to make a man healthy. So it's serious business, but you do have to have a sense of humor about it.
So I want to tell the audience, they may not have caught our previous shows. Of course, they're all archived. But Dr. Dudley Danoff is president and founder of the Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group in Los Angeles. And that is a big deal. The Cedars-Sinai is a very fine medical organization, and you know, because of where you are, you have a lot of celebrity patients. And
Yes, we do. It's a Cedar Sinai is a 1,000-bed community teaching hospital, and it's kind of on the borderline, 1 foot in Beverly Hills and 1 foot in Hollywood, West Hollywood.
Right.
So a lot of the people, quote, in the biz, you know, live in this vicinity.
Right.
And I can assure you, Deanna, that some of them are very sweet and some of them are very nice and others are very pretentious. But they all put their pants on, you know, one leg at a time in the morning and use one square of toilet paper just like the rest of us. So if you treat them with respect and dignity and say, look, I realize you're somebody important and you're somebody famous, but I'm going to treat you the same way as my ordinary patients, and then we both won't get into trouble. And most of them accept it. You know, we have a couple that come in with the dark glasses and the baseball hat on backwards, but for the most part, they're very respectful and they're very, very good patients and very appreciative.
So one of the blurbs in your book is from Jerry Mayer, playwright and television writer and producer.
Right.
And he writes, a book loaded with wisdom and wit, masterfully written by Dr. Dudley Seth Danoff. I recommend this book highly as a happy Dr. Danoff patient. For over 35 years, he has kept my below-the-belt confidence high and my PSA low.
There you go.
And isn't that wonderful, a wonderful testimonial from a well-known man in the business.
Right.
You also got a from Johnny Mathis, from
Larry
Wolfgang
King.
Putt.
I have the book in front of me. Here's Larry King, and if this doesn't sound exactly like Larry King, it says, Dr. Danoff's book is the best I've ever read on this most important subject. Every man should read it. So should women.
Right. I know. It's very much
directly,
to the point.
You know, we talk directly to the women. We have a chapter. I want every woman to be, you know, a penis professor. I want every woman to know how the penis in her life works, its needs, its requirements. And I think there'd be a lot happier relationships if women would pay more attention. I mean, I don't mean that in any derogatory sense.
I know. Well, that's right. But women do better if they have a higher penis IQ, which is actually in your book too. I like it.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Yes. So, because we all do better as lovers if we are knowledgeable. And if we have skills and, you know, sexual knowledge is real power. And I love your book. It's just written so directly and with humor, and it's very easy for the layperson to understand. And as a sex therapist, as a practicing sex therapist now for 33 years, it informs me. I mean, I know a lot of the things you write about, but it informs me even better. And that's a pretty good segue. We were going to talk, because it is the beginning of the new year, about some tips for the new year. And you presented a paper for the American Urology Association, American Urologic Association,
yes.
AUA. And I loved it. And this is on your website, people. You can go to the website and read this. But five ways to reinvigorate your sex life. And, you know, as we think about resolutions, we need to think about ways to invigorate our sex lives and make
absolutely.
It happier. It'll just change our lives.
Yeah, it's my list for the new year for all men to do, either with or without your doctor. So I think we should start with exercise and physical fitness. So in order to have a good sex, you have to be physically fit. You have to have lower body strength. You have to have upper body strength. You have to have good cardiovascular fitness. So for me, for the men out there listening, let's get on it. Beginning of the new year, get on a good exercise program, and I guarantee that as a result, you will have better sex.
Yeah, people do have better sex when they are fit.
Absolutely.
And
I think a correlate to that is our diet. Eat healthy foods. I think healthy foods equal healthy sex. I mean, weight control. You look down, a man looks down, and he sees, you know, the so-called Dunlap syndrome, meaning his belly Dunlap over his belt. He looks down, his penis looks shorter. It has to traverse, you know, 2 or 3 inches of prepubic fat. So it's just not very good. And if you clog your arteries with high cholesterol foods, carbohydrates, sugary drinks, that's just a no-no. So let's get on a healthy food diet, lots of greens, lots of fiber, lots of protein, stay away from the carbs, stay away from the cholesterol items, substitute sorbet for ice cream. I think those are all good tips.
That one's hard to do.
Yeah, I agree. Sure. I mean, to be lean and mean, especially as you get a little bit older, exposed to all that good food that you have up in the San Francisco area and we have down here in L.A., it's, you know, it's hard to do.
It's very hard to do. Well, as I understand it about the eating part, there are some key food nutrients that have a clear link to sexual performance, and some of these foods that promote the production of the chemical in the body, nitric oxide,
right.
which you can explain to our listeners what that is. But as I understand it, foods that are rich in arginine, beans and walnuts and cold fish such as salmon and tuna, soy products and oats and almonds and some of these things can be very good for the production of nitric oxide.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole idea of all the what we call the PDE5 inhibitors,
right?
The Cialis, the Viagra, the Levitra of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the quick fix to get what you need to increase blood flow. But all of those foods are healthy: kale, greens, and stay away from the cholesterol items and fried foods. And if you are going to have a steak, you know, don't have one every day. And if you do eat one, eat a lean one. And stay away from that Japanese Wagyu beef. I mean, that's like the bacha morte, the kiss of death for your coronary arteries and the blood flow to that, you know, vital place we all love.
Right. And as I understand it, those lucky Japanese cows get massaged and are fed beer.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I've certainly seen it on the menu at some upscale steakhouse here in L.A.
Yeah.
And I ordered it once. I mean, it was, I thought it was disgusting, actually.
Really?
It was
just fatty?
So fatty. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. So getting on with a couple of the more tips. So another thing people forget about, believe it or not, Deanna, is sleep. And I'm recommending to all my guys at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. I mean, it increases your stamina, improves your focus. And we often overlook that. You know, we're all stressed out. We all have too many things on our plate. We're all rushing hither and thither. And so sleep and rest is very, very important. And I think the fourth thing that I wanted to emphasize for the new year was this whole concept of anxiety. And I think we've talked about anxiety a number of times.
Yes, we have.
I mean, that's a killer. That's a killer for sex. It's a killer for self-esteem. Whether it's performance anxiety or anxiety about the job or anxiety about road rage or any form of anxiety. So put it in a box, compartmentalize it, and keep it out of your life.
Because when you have chronic stress, anxiety, your cortisol is elevated, and that really kills even erections.
Yeah, that's a vasoconstrictor, narrows the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And the other item, or the last sort of my big five for the new year, is PSA screening. So,
yeah, we need to talk about that.
So it's controversial. Because the problem is that lots of things elevate a PSA, sex, a bowel movement, riding a bicycle, sitting on a hard bench. But unfortunately, one of the things that elevates a PSA is prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. So right now, as a screening test, it's really the most reliable one that we have, and it certainly allows us to make the early diagnosis of prostate cancer when the cancer is still organ-confined and curable. And this year alone, Diana, 240,000 new cases of prostate cancer will be identified in the United States alone. So
wow.
This is not, you know, this is not just a little disease.
It just
and,
so this is per year,
right.
new cases. And if listeners want to see you on The Doctors talking about the prostate and why men don't get the prostate exam, you do some, there are some great visuals on that show.
Right. Well, you know, look, a woman would never miss her annual pap smear, never miss her mammogram. But, you know, it takes, you know, three people pushing a man to his urologist in the office. You know, all men are macho. We think we're indestructible. We all want to catch the, you know, final touchdown pass in the closing minute of the Super Bowl. And men don't want to admit that they have any weakness or there can possibly be anything wrong. And that's just, that is just a no-no.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a very life-threatening no-no.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the early diagnosis of prostate cancer, we treat those that are amenable to surgery. We treat them with a robot. We do it essentially as an outpatient, basically without any incision other than little keyholes. The patients have virtually no postoperative pain. They have perfect preservation of their continence. They have preservation of their erectile function. So this fear that if you do need prostate surgery with the new technique, with the robot, your fear should not be there. It's not realistic.
I have a family member who in about 2001 had the surgery for prostate cancer. And even now, because his urologist surgeon did not have the newest techniques or whatever, even now, he is impotent and has urinary incontinence, and it's just a shame.
Yeah, the progress in the last 15 years in our ability to treat prostate cancer, preserve potency, and preserve continence is just astounding. You know, I'm in the prostate cancer business for more than 30 years, and the innovation of the robot, the dynamism of the robot, the accuracy of the robot, is the single most spectacular movement, progress, event, call it what you like, that I have seen in my 30 years of practice. Now, we've seen lots of things, fiber optic, lasers, all sorts of things, but the use of the robot, the technology involved with robotic surgery is just astounding. It is astounding. And what was
done
15
years ago? Who was the inventor? Were there several? Do you know the backstory of that? The inventors? Were there? Do you know?
Yeah, I think I know the backstory. The robot, as a surgical tool, was basically designed by the Army. I mean, by our military.
Oh,
and it was designed to be able to have a surgeon sit at a back base, in other words, away from the forward line or away from the action, and actually operate on a wounded veteran, a wounded warrior at some forward station in some life-saving way. So the robot, the one who sits, the surgeon that sits at the console, can drive the robot, and the robot is actually remote. It's not connected to the surgeon. So a corpsman could be at the operating table where the patient is. The surgeon could be in some remote location, and the surgeon on the robotic console is controlling the arms with rotation of a...
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, that's... Yeah,
that's amazing. Now, I read that a Minnesota study found that men who'd had intercourse more than 3,000 times in their lives had half the prostate cancer risk of those who had not.
And I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's a great idea.
I do too. So they're not sure why it's true. But then again, studies have found that men who have more intercourse tended to have better prostate function and eliminated more waste products in their semen. And doesn't that include, Dr. Danoff, maybe some carcinogenic things that are eliminated with the ejaculation?
Sure, I think prostate is like any other organ. It needs, exercise. And,
right.
And I cannot think of one downside, one negative in safe sex. The more the better. A man cannot wear his penis out. The most sensitive part really is the skin. It doesn't have a bone in it. You can't break it. You can bend it, twist it, whack it. But, it's a very, very durable organ. There is no downside. Now, look, if you're a sex slave, if you're abusive in terms of your partner, I mean, that clearly is off the table. But anything that goes on between two consenting adults in the privacy of their own home, someone once said to me, it's unlike professional wrestling. In sex, there are no holds, H-O-L-D-S, barred.
Yes, that's very good. So as I understand it, since we're talking about healthy tips for the new year and bringing more sex into your relationship and as you said, also getting more sleep and rest and more exercise and eating better and so on, and then the PSA testing. Let's talk about another health benefit of sex, and that is improved heart health, because sex has been linked to increased circulation, lower cholesterol, and lower blood pressure. And the statistic I love is that, this is now 5 years plus old, but Brazil's Minister of Health made a surprising recommendation when he encouraged Brazilians to have sex 5 times a week as a countermeasure to the nation's hypertension epidemic.
I love it. I don't know the medical accuracy of it, but I mean, intuitively, I would agree. Vigorous sex or long sex, short sex, it's a physical activity. It requires cardiovascular fitness.
Right.
It requires lung fitness. As they say, it requires strength in the lower body and the upper body. So it is an excellent, excellent form of exercise. And even as people get older, and I talk about this quite a bit in the book, where we're not as flexible as we once were, and we sometimes have to modify positions, it's still a wonderful cardiovascular exercise, to say nothing of what it does for your psyche.
Yes, what it does for your psyche, because when people have frequent sex with their loved one, A number of studies have shown that they have fewer arguments, and when they do have arguments, they get over them faster.
Right, next.
That's really important. The connection, the feeling of closeness, promoting feelings of intimacy.
Absolutely.
And closeness.
We've discussed this before, Deanna, and I think I've said it on your program more than once. But the greatest aphrodisiac at all, it's not bull's testicles or rhinoceros horn. The greatest, aphrodisiac is love. Love
That's
itself.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's magic. So some of us are lucky enough to have loved or to have been loved, and some of us have never. But for those of us who have been lucky enough to either love or been loved, that is the greatest aphrodisiac ever invented.
It really is, and with love comes actually with the emotional intimacy comes usually much better physical intimacy. It's You know, I'm remembering Robert Sternberg at Yale, and he came up with a triangular theory of love. So think of the triangle, and one side of it is commitment, and that's the cognitive part of love. You decide to commit, and often that's with marriage. And then the other side of the triangle is intimacy, and that's the emotional part of love, where you can be vulnerable, where you can trust, where you can feel safe with your partner. But at the foundation of the triangle, the bottom line, is passion. And that's the motivational part of love. Because if you have a passionate relationship, you're going to want to have sex and want to be close and want to be attuned to your partner. And, it's really everything. it's lovely.
But, you know, again, we've discussed this, you know, it's, and I talk about it in the book a lot. It's very, 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 very hard to maintain a high degree of passion in a long relationship. Familiarity sometimes takes over. Boredom sometimes butts in. So we really have to make an effort in terms of our relationships with the ones we love to keep it fresh, to keep it new, to go on vacations, to try different positions, to wear a different cologne, to make sure that you're wearing a nice clothing, a woman, you know, well made up, hair nicely done, a man, you know, shower and clean and all the dark, you know, the dark and crusty places. And those things are very important.
Very important. When you gave your presentation last, I guess it was a year ago now, your number one suggestion was to keep boredom out of the bedroom. And again, listening audience, you can see Dr. Danoff's article about this on his website, The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health.com. But so I guess in front of all these urologists, you presented some of these suggestions, or the five suggestions, keep boredom out of the bedroom. And you talked about a case with one of your patients, Jack. Let's see, is it Jack? Who'd had an affair. Of course, you changed the names.
Yes,
but he had an affair with his dentist's assistant, and then he felt so much guilt. And then, so you said, take Friday off and get your wife to cancel all of her plans, rent a cabin in the mountains for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then finish the story, because I've jogged your memory about it.
Yeah, that's the perfect, first of all, you know, guilt is a non-productive emotion, so I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a sex therapist. But, you know, you can't feel guilty. We all make mistakes. We apologize for our mistakes. You know, there used to be the comedian that said, you know, the devil made me do it. any excuse is a good excuse. So we have to get guilt off the table. It's just non-productive. People are, oh, I should have, I could have, I might have, I would have. It just doesn't work. And, yeah, it's just with that story that I tell about Jack, it's just the story of keeping it fresh and keeping it new and keeping it interesting and a little candlelight and, you know, those are the things. Romantic, I love you, you look so pretty. Oh, is that a new silk shirt that you got? I love your necktie. You know, any little thing, any positive thing, a supportive thing, keep it new, keep it fresh, keep it interesting.
Keep it new. You know, you're a beautiful wife, and I met her when you presented in Carmel.
Right. You know,
Monterey, actually. And yeah. She's lucky. She's a fortunate woman.
Yeah,
and
well,
I think you're a fortunate man, too.
I was just going to reverse it. I feel more blessed. I mean, I try to be good. I do my job and I'm married over 40 years. Seems like just yesterday. But
isn't that wonderful?
I still treat her like she's my girlfriend. I hold her hand. I make sure I go around and I open the car door. I make sure that she walks, you know, through the door before I do. Nothing abusive. If we have a disagreement, we have this little expression we call next, meaning, you know, get over it. Let's get on to the next thing. You know, we agree to disagree. Next. Yeah. It's a wonderful little mechanism.
Well, it certainly is, and it's the reason that you've been married for over 40 years and happily, and yes, I think it's great. You in the same talk about reinvigorating your sex life, the second point is give yourself permission to try something new. And this is really important. I deal with this a lot in my practice.
Yes.
Because we need something new because, as I understand it, dopamine, the hormone of arousal, is expressed more when there's some novelty. So if you make love in a different place or you go away, I mean, going away is really important, as you put it, a new venue, or using props, as you put it, all of these things are really important. If you want a monogamous relationship, within that you've got to be creative and try new things.
So there's a very classic experiment which goes a little something like this. If you take a male mouse and a female mouse in heat and put them in the same cage, the male mouse will mount the female mouse over and over again with, you know, a longer and longer, what we call refractory period. In other words, the time from one ejaculation to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Until the poor mouse, you know, drops over exhausted, the male mouse. And now you take that lady mouse and you take her out of the cage and you paint her up in a different mouse color and you spray different mouse perfume on her and you put her back in the cage. And the reality is the male mouse will start again almost, not quite from ground zero, but almost. And, you know, it's a classic experiment in biology, but there's a lot to be said to it in human behavior. And, as one of my older patients said to me, he said, "Doc, I need some Viagra." I said, "Well, you know, Harry, you've been married a long time. He said, once in a while I get it on with the maid." So I said, "Oh, you need the Viagra for the maid?" "No," he said, "I don't need the Viagra for the maid. I need the Viagra for my wife."
Oh, that's golly.
Terrible story.
Your mouse story reminds me of some of the original Kinsey studies, and this involved two rats, and when mating, so the male rat is mounting the female rat, and cheese crumbs were put out, and the male rat was not distracted at all by the cheese crumbs, but the female rat was. So it's pretty important for females human females, to stay in the moment, to stay focused.
Engaged, stay
engaged.
Engagé, as they say in Paris.
Yes. And, and to stay engaged and to be in the moment. And, of course, as I understand it, women have a bigger corpus callosum, which is the connecting tissue between the right and left hemisphere. Right. So they're more likely to multitask. Because when a woman has a baby, if she's having sex, she has to also hear the baby cry. But long after babies, many women are multitasking. So when I work with women who like want to have an orgasm, for example, I stress, you know, staying present.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, the sensate focus. Yes.
Sort of tangentially to that point, I mean, you know, performance anxiety is much more common amongst men. I'm sure you see this in your practice as I do in mine, than it is in women. You know, a woman can just stay there, fake it if you like. A man can't do that. A man either gets an erection or has an ejaculation or he doesn't. And it's very, very hard to hide, you know, under the sheets for a man. And that can create performance anxiety. And I think it's really, really, really important in a relationship between a man and a woman, or even in a gay relationship, that the female support the man in every way. Oh, you're beautiful. Oh, you're wonderful. Oh, this is glorious. Oh, it's the best I ever saw. Oh, it's the best I ever had. And although it may be an exaggeration, that is music to a man's ear, even though he knows, I'm not sure it's true, but it's music to a man's ear.
Well, also, let's reverse this. Women often need more emotional foreplay, and that involves saying the words. In other words, the woman is saying, make love to me in my ear. Yes. I need to hear the words. I need to hear the compliments.
So both men and women need to hear good things. Yeah, I agree with that. I was just trying to focus with the performance anxiety. Yeah,
of course. Yes, of course.
Women need a lot of foreplay, and you know what they call Jewish foreplay, don't you, Deanna?
No, I don't.
20 minutes of begging.
20 minutes of begging.
Okay, I had to throw that in.
You no doubt have some Jewish patients who have experienced this.
A lot of people in the biz are Jewish patients. And everyone, you know, it's very interesting because in terms of what I do, examination, digital rectal, excuse me, bend over, this is not painful. It's a very embarrassing examination for a man. And almost all of them, you know, want to tell a joke. You know, Doc, have you heard this one?
Right.
They want to sort of desensitize the moment and make it a little lighthearted. So I've heard, you know, just about every genital sex joke ever invented by me. So, but
it's part of
the territory, Deanna.
Of course. And, you know, in general, we need to bring more humor to sex because sex is play. Ultimately, sex is play. It's not brain surgery. So it helps to have a sense of humor.
Yeah, you can't take it too seriously, that's for sure.
No, and and I get some guys who they worry, like the woman may love cunnilingus, but it takes some time to provide this kind of oral stimulation. And sometimes while he's doing this, while his mouth is fully occupied with giving her pleasure, his penis may simply take a nap. And
hate when that happens.
but what I suggest to my couples is that, you know, some men get quite aroused by giving the woman oral sex, and especially if she's responsive to it and orgasmic through it.
Right.
And so that can be a turn-on for him, and if he does lose his erection, it'll come back. It'll come back.
Woman, I mean, look, I think excitement from a partner is also one of the most stimulating things that can happen during sex. So whether it be a man who is excited by a woman's excitement or a woman who's excited by a man's excitement, I think that's a very, very key factor in having successful sex and meaningful sex and enjoyable sex. So that mutual excitement is sometimes hard to achieve. But if you can, I think you will have a more fulfilling relationship.
Absolutely. Because there is more sexual energy that's being exchanged. And so that ups the attunement. If you're attuned, and this is usually pretty high-level sexuality that takes time and practice, by the way. People think that they're having the best sex of their lives, say, in their late 20s, and it may not be true.
Yeah,
it may be more likely true by the time they're in their late 50s. with, or it could be sooner, but with time and experience and developing skills, and which includes sexual skills as well as relationship skills.
You know, and I would say with advancing age, I mean, you may ejaculate, or man may ejaculate less frequently, but it's no less enjoyable. And I hear that,
yes,
you know, for many of my patients. And in my younger patients, I mean, premature ejaculation is a very, very big issue.
One of the
advantages to getting a little bit older is it does take a little longer for things to develop, and it is in many ways more pleasurable. And
yes,
one of my patients said to me recently, an older gentleman said to me, "It you know, Doc, it takes me all night long to do what I used to do all night long."
Right. Yes. And so I think you even talk about giving yourself permission to be sexual, maybe in some new ways. In your book, you have a good amount about this, because, and you've talked about this, I heard you talk about it on the doctor's program, that you're not going to do what you did at 20, at 60. Can you just expand on that a little bit for our listening audience?
Sure. I mean, you know, a male at 20 is in his sexual prime. You know, he's a walking erection 24/7. He can ejaculate, you know, multiple times in a 24-hour period. His mind is completely between his legs. You know, this is the center of his world. He's driven by it. His testosterone is the highest. As a man matures, obviously, the refractory period is, you know, much longer, and a man maybe in his 60s can have an orgasm once a week or twice a week and not more, but it's no less pleasurable. Also, as we discussed a little bit earlier, as we get older, we're not so flexible. And
yeah,
we have to modify our positions, and we can't, you know, do the, you know, look like the Cirque du Soleil, you know, at 60, as you did perhaps when you were, you know, 20, swinging from the chandelier and meeting somebody on the upstroke. It just can't be done. So,
yeah,
you know, look, we've talked about age appropriateness. So it's age appropriateness about sexuality. It's age appropriateness about exercise. It's age appropriateness about diet. And as we age, your expectations have to be modified. No question about it.
And it can, if you have the right partner and the right attitude, it can be a very satisfying experience.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was very unusual, Deanna, when I first came into practice, for me to see a 100-year-old patient a month, maybe
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual now where I have weeks in which I see 100 or 200-year-old patients a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're living longer. We're living healthier lives. I mean, we all die in the end. But
right,
our objective as physicians is to have our patients live healthy lives until the end.
Yeah.
And we see sexuality now in men in their late 80s and in the 90s. I recently talked to a 100-year-old guy that was very, very, very alert. He said, you know, I said, well, what about sex, Larry? He said, oh, gosh, Doc. He says, I dream about it. He says, I dream about just getting it up and in one more time. 100-year-old guy. Amazing. So,
yeah.
Still thinking like a young buck.
I think a lot of, you know, back in the early 90s, I did some studies on aging and sexuality with an MD. This is when I lived in Palo Alto, and Dr. Walter Bortz. So we looked at male sexuality, talking to many groups of SIRs, Sons in Retirement. And we gave them a questionnaire, and we got a huge return. We got 1,200 return on, I don't know, you know, maybe 3,000, but it was a good return. And So what we found out is, and in our sample, it was from 55 to 95. And even some of the older guys, if they had an interested, an interesting partner, and they were healthy, they were having good sex and enjoyed it. And I'm sure that's what you find,
too. It's different. I mean, there's no question that it's different. A 20-year-old having sex is a little different than a 70-year-old having sex, but it's
right.
It can be no less pleasurable,
mm-hmm.
and no less anticipated,
mm-hmm.
and no less cherished on either
mm-hmm.
end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of that is true. You also say pay attention to body rhythms. This is under your invigorate your love life. That you're, and this has to do also with aging, but you say your particular rhythms may be better suited to sex at unusual times of the day, and that could be morning sex. I mean, as I understand it, sometimes testosterone is as much as 14 times higher in the morning, so that would be a good time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, biologically, that's a fact. So, and you know, fatigue affects sexual energy, and I encourage my patients, you know, really pay close attention to the ways in which their bodies respond to different emotional and physical conditions. And, you know, it's really, really fundamentally important that you have an awareness of your body's rhythm, and your sexual responsiveness is going to change with stress, fatigue, anxiety, or sickness. And you have to get these rhythms and, you know, suit it to your sexual behavior.
And that's a good segue into your point number four, which is don't confine sex to the nighttime, which we just touched on.
Yes, absolutely. Surprise, surprise in the morning. Midday, the midday snack.
The midday snack. And then you say, your fifth point is look into alternative sex practices. So when was when was the last time you tried something other than missionary position? Have you tried letting your partner get on top and control the action? Have you tried doggy style? So on. As I understand it, the man, if he's having sex doggy style, he experiences a different sensation with his penis. But I have to ask you, because I'm obviously not a man. Do you think there's a different kind of sensation?
Look, it's so, Deanna, it is so, you know, individual.
Mm.
You know, I have patients that tell me they have difficulty ejaculating unless they're doing it doggy style. Difficulty ejaculating unless they're standing up or sitting down or lying on their side. So it's
mm-hmm.
so psychological and it's so individual. And then when
mm-hmm.
we talk about sensation, it is so subjective. It's very, you know, very, very hard to quantitate, quote, pleasure. I mean, how do you quantitate it? It's almost entirely subjective as far as I can determine. I mean, I speak both as a physician and as a man.
Right, right. I know you are, and that's what makes you such an excellent guest, really. yeah, because I think a lot of women, though, wonder how would it feel to have a penis.
Oh, well, you
and
know,
how do
so
different
that, I, know, I talk about
feel.
That a little bit. You know, I say, you know, it's not women who have penis envy. It's men.
Right. No, no.
So women, I mean, you might be right that how, you know, what does it feel like? But men have penis envy, you know. Is mine big enough? Does it compare to, you know, the guy in the locker room next to me? So it's not the women. So women have penis curiosity.
Right.
Men,
exactly.
Men have penis envy. Sort of a switch. But, you know, when you think about it physiologically and anatomically, the clitoris mm-hmm. is a penis, except it doesn't have a hole in it. but it has many of the same sensory fibers. So it is stimulated very, very close to the glans penis, which is the tip of a man's penis, which is highly innervated and very sensitive. And so those two organs have physiologically a lot in common.
Well, as I think that the clitoris even has more of the nerve fibers, maybe a couple thousand more than the penis has. Because the erectile
again,
tissues
I
are
don't,
the same.
I don't remember that specifically from my anatomy, but I don't doubt that that is true. I don't doubt that it's true.
Yeah.
But they are analogous. They are very, very analogous organs.
So it's very important that a man knows his woman's anatomy and the importance of her clitoris and how he can be a better lover, a better skilled lover, if he knows how to perform cunnilingus, to perform oral sex on her and stimulate her clitoris, because her clitoris will look like a small penis because it has these erectile tissues once it's stimulated.
Yeah. You know, when we treat female sexual dysfunction, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that we recommend esterase cream in an older woman, which is an estrogen cream.
Right.
We also recommend a very small dose of Viagra. Even though it is not approved by the FDA for that purpose, we do recommend it, and basically it increases blood flow to the clitoris and augments sexuality. So it's something that we recognize, and clinically we act upon it.
Yes, and I think when Pfizer was going way back, maybe to the turn of the last century, that Pfizer wanted to prove that maybe Viagra would really help women, but it turned out that except for improving blood flow, and I once took it just to see, because I always like to try things, and I did notice more blood flow and so on, but a lot of women who don't like their partners or who are not real happy with their lovers didn't notice the difference, and so it didn't make a difference.
Yeah,
whereas
a
man has an erection, he notices that right away.
Well, I mean, you Viagra will not make an erection in a dead man, and Viagra is not a drug, or that class of drugs are not drugs of desire. So I advise all my patients that when you take these drugs, you have to take them about an hour before, you must be stimulated. So if you just take the drug and lie there and stare at the ceiling and are not sexually stimulated, those drugs just don't work. So you need that psychological stimulation and to make them work.
Well, Dr. Danoff, you know, that's such an important message. And based on what my clients, my patients say, many of their urologists don't tell them that.
Yeah, well,
they don't tell them that they need to like their partner, and they need to have some stimulation for the PDE5 inhibitor.
Anger is a killer. Is a killer. Anger is a killer for love. Anger is a killer for an erection. It's like anxiety. You've got to put it in a box and get rid of it.
Well, and that's why I have to do psychotherapy often before I can do sex therapy.
Absolutely. Got to get the anger out of the room.
Yeah. You know, they're not going to want to go and make love if they're just so angry with each other.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So then back to the biology of this. So they're angry and their cortisol drives up, then that's going to interfere with their sex hormones.
Absolutely, because remember, all of those are vasoconstrictors, that class of compounds, cortisol.
Yeah.
So it does the opposite of what we want. We want to increase blood flow to the organ. And those medications and those compounds decrease blood flow by constricting blood vessels, part of the flight or fright mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are just not good for sex, and not good for lovemaking, and not good for anything, except if you're being chased by a hungry lion, maybe.
You know, back when I lived in Palo Alto, so we're going back to 25, 30 years, I heard a lecture by Dr. Robert Sapolsky at Stanford, and he'd written a book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And the premise was that zebras can either, well, usually if they're being chased by a lion, they're fleeing, they're not fighting, but with human beings subjected to chronic stress, chronic adrenaline and cortisol, it affects every single organ of the body, and my ears perked up at the time, and even now, including fertility. Chronic stress. That's why some people, you know, they adopt, they relax, and then they have a baby naturally.
Yeah. I don't have a scientific explanation for that, but I know intuitively, and I know from experience, that stress is a killer in more ways than one.
Yes. Well, you are the most delightful man. And I hope I can convince you, we'll do this off the air, to this is 7, so this would be part 8, but part 2 for this year. I hope I can convince you in maybe about 3 months or so.
It's always a pleasure to spend the afternoon with you, Deanna. Even though we can't touch each other, we're thinking of each other. We're thinking each other. I always enjoy speaking with you. I think you have a very, very insight. A very keen insight. I think you're very outspoken. I think you're not bashful in any way. And it's really a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that, Dr. D. So, listeners, please go to. And I'll put this in my review, which I'm about to write up after we stop the show, The Ultimate Guide to Men's Health.com. And you can get all kinds of information. Plus, they can join your Q&A, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We Twitter at Dr. Danoff, which is one word. And everything is on the website. You can call me in L.A. We have blogs. We're all out there.
Thank you, Dr. D.
Thank you,
Deanna. We'll talk again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.